The following podcast is a Super Network production and spin-off of the King Zone podcast with the King Zone's Book Club podcast, hosted by Super Marcy.
We know what goes on in these parts near Jerusalem's lot.
And Stephen T. Boltz.
I love this stuff, this world building that he does with literally one sentence. Mm.
It contains adult themes.
Must either be mad or run the risk of becoming so.
Coarse language.
There are huge rats in the wall.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Prepare to take a deep dive into the literary works of Stephen King with us. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the King Zones Book Club podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and welcome back to the first episode for 2025. It has been a little bit between episodes, and that is solely because things are busy and schedules and the like. But we are back, and of course, I am not alone. My co-host is here with me. Please welcome Stephen T. Boltz.
I prefer esteemed co-host.
Esteemed, my esteemed co-host, yeah. Yes.
Today we're looking, what would you call this double? The industrial stories?
Yes. Yes.
AKA the jobs Stephen King held while a young teacher podcast.
Oh.
Yeah. And thanks to Bede for recommending these two stories.
Yes, indeed.
We wanted to do Graveyard Shift. Remember, we've been dying to do Graveyard Shift. And I'm like, what the hell do you pair with giant rats? And so what do you do? And Bede sort of, he went 90 degrees on us and suggested The Mangler. Another industrial story. So yes, thank you to our co-host Bede for that recommendation.
Yes, good work, Bede. We finally are at Graveyard Shift. We're talking about this short story along with The Mangler. And I am looking forward to this. And I have some interesting things that I discovered, which I will get into momentarily. So Steve, we'll start off with Graveyard Shift. Do you want to give us a bit of the publication history of the story?
Graveyard Shift was first published in October 1970 in Cavalier magazine. It was then collected in Night Shift in 1978, which is where I discovered it. It was adapted into a pretty terrible motion picture in 1990, which I think you guys have covered.
We have
already.
Indeed.
Okay, so it'll be interesting to talk about this and to sort of not to go too deeply into the movie, but to see the differences.
And there are quite a number of differences. So, brief synopsis of Graveyard Shift. A young drifter named Hall has been working at a rat-infested textile mill in the small town of Gates Fall in Maine. His boss, a not very nice foreman named Warwick, recruits him and a few others with a huge cleaning effort in the basement of the textile mill. The men eventually come across a sub-basement locked from the inside that harbors something more terrifying and hideous than any of the men could have dreamed.
All right. Classic Stephen King, right? Yes. But a bit Lovecrafty, maybe, with the rats in the walls is the story I'm thinking of. But what did you think of this one, first off?
Yeah, so the interesting thing with Graveyard Shift is I didn't think I had read it before. And as I sat down to read the story for this podcast, I'm thinking, I have read this before. And then it clicked when I first watched, or at least I could have watched Graveyard Shift like earlier in life, but I don't remember. But upon a rewatch well over 10 years ago, I ended up just being, I don't know, underwhelmed maybe by the film. And I thought, okay, I want to see what the short story is. And yeah, like rereading it again, I'm like, okay, I do remember this. And it's a story that I actually really, really like. It is the rat story, but the rats are at this like textile mill. So that's where our industrial comes from. And it's these rats that are basically living in the basement. So sub-basement of the mill. So we have Hall and the other characters having to clean this place up. And just the way it's described, I would not want to go anywhere near the Exile Mill. I mean, even just like on the level 3, I believe, there's rats. It just sounds horrible. But the way that the rats are described is just utterly terrifying, because I don't want to come across rats that are that humongous. And let me tell you, where I live, the rats really enjoy going along the fence at night. And they already look pretty big. If they were what Hall was describing just on level 3, I would not be here.
Yeah, they're massive. They're massive just for regular rats.
Very, very.
I liked that the rats were secondary to the story. They were not the real problem. The problem is between Hall and Warwick.
Yes.
Right? And they're sort of clashing all the way through is what builds the tension and builds everything up in this. And the rats are just like, yeah, okay. The rats are there. The rats are a problem, but it's really the culmination of the battle between the two wills of these two guys.
Yes. And I mean, through the story, through the interactions that Hall has with Warwick, I was very much on Hall's side for the entire thing.
Yeah.
Warwick really is like just the kind of person you would imagine. And yeah, the rats are secondary to what's going on, because it is the clash between the two characters as they're doing this massive cleaning effort in the basement, which is just full of stuff that's not been cleared for years. They've got the massive hoses to clean it out, and the rats just happen to be there.
Yeah, Hall was really interesting character because, well, he was a drifter. He's described as a drifter, no family, you know, doesn't really hold down a job. The list of jobs he has, King lists the various jobs he's gone through, and he just moves from town to town, and, you know, doesn't really have any connections. He seems really chill, really laid back, but there's something about Warwick that sets him off, isn't it? Just something about this guy. I think it's because he keeps calling him college boy.
Yes.
It's right?
Like that got that
really
insult.
Irritating. Yeah,
college like that's boy. An insult,
right?
Oh, why? Because
he's smarter than us.
Because right? He got educated. Okay.
And the way their antagonistic relationship, because they each antagonize the other.
Yeah.
So they keep sparring back and forth. So in the end, right, what they end up doing, Warwick gets a bunch of these guys to clean out the sub-basement for the 4th of July weekend. So they're getting overtime and everything's fine. But he's kind of, I don't know, it kind of feels like he's pressured them into the job at the same time. Because he's a bully of a foreman, I don't feel like they could say no.
Yeah.
So, and one of the other characters, there are a couple characters that we get involved with here. There's Charlie Brochu is one of them, Cy Ipiston. But the main one is Wisconsky, Harry Wisconsky, who is just a drag. This is the guy Hall is working with most of the time. And he's just whiny and he's fueling Hall's frustration. So Hall finds this sub-basement. And Warwick doesn't want to investigate it. He's like, no, the job was the basement. That's where we are. That's what we're going to do. But the rats are coming from the sub-basement. So Hall gets Warwick and Wisconsky to go in. Once they're down there, they find all these mutated albino rats, some legless rats just pulling themselves along. It's pretty horrific. They find the queen mother of all rats, this like basically cow-sized rat with no eyes or legs that's just breeding more and more rats down there. And it's so gross. It's so disgusting. Wisconsky's like, I'm out of here. Right. He takes off, but Hall won't let Warwick turn around. No. And Warwick ends up getting beaten by rats. Hall is taken down by a giant rat creature. I didn't understand where Hall got the death wish. I can understand him wanting to take Warwick out, but he knows he's not getting out of here alive. Was he set up enough for you to feel like he's got nothing to lose?
That's a good question. Maybe not, but at the same time, it feels like, because we don't have a full, I guess, clear picture of Hall. So it could be just he reached his breaking point, something like that, but we don't know. But because, like you brought up, it could be a bit Lovecraftian So for me, because obviously, like, I did think of that as well. And that's not something I'd thought about when I read it before from memory, seeing as I forgot I had read it, that I feel like there is this, like, Hall has this pull towards what's down in there. And that would be, I guess, the mystical forces that have made these creatures in there. I don't know. But I just kind of feel like there's maybe a darkness that pulled him in. And that darkness kind of reflects what he does to Warwick.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll accept it. That sounds good.
That could be an explanation.
That's fine. That's all we need. Just a little something. Just a little something to get me over the line. You know, I still would have liked to see him climb back up the ladder and go, don't know, we lost Warwick.
Yeah.
But because he wasn't particularly a likable guy, but he wasn't detestable like Warwick either. But no, you're right. Probably just pushed him a little bit over.
Yeah. And I feel like because we have so much darkness already in the story, whether that's the darkness of the basement, then the sub-basement, the darkness of these mutated rats and bats thriving in there, that it's a dark story in the sense that there isn't going to be a happy ending. Warwick is now eaten by the creatures. Hall, trying to get out, which he definitely knows he wasn't going to make it, gets eaten by them. But the men in the basement above where the door is to the sub-basement wonder what happens. And this is where it makes you think, like, if they go down there, they're probably not coming out either. And then this cycle will repeat itself. And in that way, it does have a Lovecraftian tinge for me. And now I'm just convincing myself more that the pull of this darkness is why Hall did what he did.
Okay. Because that's the final scene. The guy's going, well, we better go check what happened to these. And then they head down as well.
And that's where it ends. And you
can use your imagination. That's it. Exactly. Now, speaking of use your imagination, they find... How would you describe it? Is it a coffin? Do you remember how it's described? They find this box.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I don't know if he distinctly says coffin, but that's probably the kind of thing that would be what
comes it's got to mind. A dude's name on it. The name Elias Varney. When they're walking, when they're in the sub basement, they're walking, and they get to a point and they look up and it's the edge of the factory.
Mm.
So this sub basement extends beyond the factory. And they find this this box in the sub-basement dating back to 1841. It's before the mill was built.
Mm.
And this Elias Varney name on it. And that's all we get.
This could have been a cemetery that they just built all this over. It could be a number of things. It's little hints. And that's where I think King wants you to think about and come to your own conclusions.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. There's a whole other story here that I need more information. I want that story. I want to know, I'll take the prequel story to Graveyard Shift any day, man.
I would like to know what happened back in 18, I can't remember the year now.
Yeah.
41, yes. Because, there's certain hints and that, for me, I thought like maybe they went over a cemetery or maybe they just, built over the town that was there.
Yeah.
But I think kind of.
And why?
Yeah. Which feeds back into this darkness. Like, was this darkness always there? Was messing with the dead something that happened? We don't know.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit is Jerusalem's Lot.
Mm.
Do you remember the town that he went, the town of Jerusalem's Lot that he went to? It was kind of like the Marie Celeste. Tables were set, things were put, there were no people. And the church and the giant worm thing going on there, that darkness that you're talking about, it clearly pervaded Jerusalem's Lot. And if you follow the Dark Tower series, everything in the King universe is connected in one way or another.
Mm.
So there's no saying that those two stories couldn't be from the same universe.
But especially with so much darkness.
And during this time, there was a lot of that in his stories too, a lot of that Lovecraftian tinge.
Mm. A little bit of the sprinkled in. Although I can imagine Stephen King working in some really disgusting, like, rat-infested textile mill and just having the worst kind of boss and being like, you know what? I'm just going to add some other crap in this story and we're good to go.
I just want to feed you to these fuckers. Who hurt you,
Stephen King, that every like bully character is just so awful. But in saying that, he reflects reality because people are really like that.
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah, I think for a very compelling short story, the film version just doesn't hold a candle. And I think that it, with the kind of short story it is, if you're not really sure on how to flesh it out, it probably would be better to make it a short film, not a 90-minute film.
Look, I know you've covered this, so in a way, I don't want to get into it, but in a way, you're the best person to talk to about this because you have already dissected the film. I get needing to expand a short story for a feature film, but there are ways to do that and ways not to do that. Lawnmower Man. So, like, what I'm thinking here is, yes, the movie had to expand on certain ideas, and we can talk about this again when we talk about The Mangler, but I think the movie actually probably expanded on these ideas in the best way it could. It was just written poorly.
Mm.
That's my take on it. And turning Harry Wisconsky into Harriet Wisconsky / Paul's love interest was just one of the biggest what the fuck moments about that movie entirely.
Makes no sense.
Well, it made no, I mean, I don't mind throwing a love interest in, but you completely changed the character of Wisconsky. Yeah. Just name her something else, man. Wisconsky was actually a fairly important character in this story.
Yeah, because he sort of adds to Hall's mood through the piece with how that works. And combining that character with a love interest takes away from all of that, because I feel like the focus has to be, like, you obviously have the rats and whatnot, but it's the focus on the conflicts between the characters, mm-hmm. and that I think got very jumbled up in that, where it's so just clear and cut in this short story.
Oh, Hall, he's antagonistic towards everyone. So adding a love interest for him, it just doesn't fit his character. But changing Wisconsky into a love interest takes away that very important archetype that helped, like you say, fuel Hall. Mm. And God bless Brad Dourif, but that character lifts right out. Like, there's no purpose at all for that character, who is, again, not in the short story, but an interesting addition. I mean, he plays the exterminator. They get an exterminator in to take care of the rats. But his death is so ignominious. Like, and it almost has nothing to do with anything in the story. I was like, oh, wow, you could edit him out of this movie entirely and not bat an eye.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think, there's a lot of, I would say, things that just don't quite work, but that is one of them, because you want to have characters that serve a purpose in everything. And it does feel like they took away, like, purpose with the film version. But as a whole, I think this is actually quite a strong and at times kind of unsettling
story. All the way through. Our friend Craig Martin has his theory on the movie is that it's about class struggle. I see that in the story as well. I mean, that's not as developed as it may be in the movie, because I don't get that Warwick is necessarily a bourgeois type character, you know, and that Hall is the struggling working class or anything. That's maybe a liberty that they took for the movie. But I do get the sense that Hall is just anti-establishment. That, you know, and Warwick coming in and basically being as gruff as he is and just being, oh, college boy.
Yeah. And considering, like, when was this published? 1970 for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
With changing attitudes during the 60s, like, it makes, these characters make total sense.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Like, you can picture them in that time period. But it does not to say you couldn't put those characters at any point in time.
Exactly.
It sets a mood. And you know it's, you know, on the cusp of going into the 70s where $75 a week is decent.
Yeah. Well, he's making minimum, which is like $1.65 an hour.
Yeah. I'm like, no. Wow. Yeah, you can't buy a loaf of bread for that anymore. So it honestly, it can take, it sort of shocks, because it's like, yeah, things were not as, like, you weren't spending the same.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But yeah, I can see within the film about the class struggle, but I think that's probably something that comes off as more of a film thing rather than a short story thing. But you could kind of interpret it in such a way because they're going, like, lower and lower, and that's kind of your classes. You go lower and lower.
Yeah, yeah, from level 3 into the basement to the sub-basement, yeah.
So if you think, you know, I don't think it's like forcing something together. I think when you put the threads together, you can, you know, get something there. So there could be, that could have been the intention. It could be something that was just bred into that maybe wasn't the intention, but there we go.
You know what? That's for better minds than ours to debate. For my money, I'm here for the horror. I was here for the giant eyeless rats.
Yeah, I'd rather not come across those. And I like that the descriptions of it are not, like, they're kind of vague. So what you picture in your mind is going to be quite horrific, which it was.
Oh, and that goes back to Lovecraft as well. Mm. You know, if I described it, you would go insane. Holy exactly. Shit, Howard, what am I supposed to make of that, right? And that's going to be different for everyone. Mm. So that makes it a very personal sort of horror.
Yeah, what I pictured in my head is not something I ever want to come across. So, Steve, let's give our final thoughts and rating for Graveyard Shift. We've unpacked quite a lot that may or may not have been there. I'll throw it over to you for your rating and final thoughts. So I should say rating out of 5.
Out of 5. This is one of my favorite King stories. Like, and that doesn't narrow it down, right? Like, I find almost every story in Night Shift to be at the very least, a 4-star story. This one gets a little bit more because it is so, so horrific. This definitely gets 4.5 giant blind rats from me.
Yeah, I actually agree. I give it 4.5 giant rat cow looking creature that just breeds constantly, and then a rat bat that attacks in the basement. This is a short story that I really love. I love that we have the conflict between the characters. We have a setting that you wouldn't normally think of, and then it just goes down to the really horrific parts of the parts of the meal. So I didn't describe that very well, but I think Graveyard Shift is just a really great short story, and I definitely revisit this one again.
Yeah, this is tops. This is aces. Okay, well, let's talk about the second story we're looking at, The Mangler. We're shifting from an industrial mill to an industrial laundry. It was first published in December of 1972, also in Cavalier magazine. It was also collected in Night Shift in 1978, and also adapted into a terrible motion picture in 1995. These two stories have so many similarities. It's incredible.
There are. Right? There really are, isn't there? And the plot summary for The Mangler: a police detective investigating a sudden rash of grisly deaths caused by an industrial laundry machine discovers that through a series of unfortunate coincidences, the machine has been possessed by a demon.
How do you not read that as a comedy?
I can't.
That's the greatest thing about this story, is it's straight-faced.
It is.
It's not written as a comedy. It kind of reminded me of The Lawnmower Man, where basically the devil was franchising into, you know, the lawn mowing industry, taking over jobs from 14-year-olds. This was very much like that, the demon possessing the machinery. And it's not, you're not laughing at it. You're going, oh, okay, no, this all comes together. Like, the way this thing got possessed, the way this thing was brought to life, There's so many bits and pieces that had to come together in order for this to work. And they all did. And he explains how it happened. And you're like, okay, well, yeah, fine. I'm with it. So that when this industrial laundry press unmoors itself from the factory floor and apparently drags itself through town, I don't know. We never really see it. We hear it. I'm on board. I totally believe this. But it's absurd.
Oh, see, where do I even start with it? Because, like, the very start of the short story where the detective, Hunton, goes to the Blue Ribbon Laundry where a worker was killed. And this, to me, is one of the most horrific parts of this story because the way it's, like, Hunton comes into the place, but one of the other workers, I can't remember who it was, is just so, like, horrified. It's an unspeakable horror that this person has seen, and that's obviously leads to finding, I think it's Adele Frawley in the laundry, like, speed ironing and folding machine. Yeah. So that, to me, was like, okay, that's really horrific, like, dying in that way, being, like, folded up by this machine, and how the people react to it. But then it loses me because it's what's the right word? You used it before. It is absurd. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's absolutely absurd. So I was laughing at this a lot. And it was after this beginning part, because then these other incidences start happening, and the way it's described, it's almost like I picture it like an angry dragon breathing like out steam or something. But I could not take it seriously. For me, it was
exactly
funny. And there's so much more I want to try and get to, but like there's a scene where I believe one of the workers, I think it's the foreman, George Stanner gets his arm basically like ripped off from this machine that it's just constantly like, it's a slow, really awful process of him just losing his arm.
Yeah.
But it's horrific, King doesn't hold why back. Am I just like, I can't, and... Like, and this should be a setting that should scare me because, like, my first job, I worked in a dry cleaners and I worked with machines. I worked with pressing, ironing. I worked in steam all the time.
Right.
And the most horrific thing for me was I just constantly got burnt. Like, nothing was attacking me or anything, but I got burnt a lot. So... the steam, all the talk the of steam, the steam yeah. brings back memories of going, oh, yep, burnt myself there. But you'd think this would be more horrific because I was always scared I was going to, like, press my arm down on the iron or something. But it doesn't, I don't know, it just gets so absurd how it takes itself so seriously because they're sort of trying to work it out. Like, this machine has the nickname of the Mangler. But it all started when one of the young workers, their finger, I believe, got cut on the machine.
Yeah, Sherry Ouellette.
Yeah.
Sherry Ouellette cuts her finger on it.
She cuts her
and
finger
it tasted
on
blood.
It.
She's a virgin. So they,
yeah.
that sets things off. But there are other things. So wait. Go, okay.
Back I was going to say, the whole thing is like, you mentioned that she's, Sherry is a virgin, but. Mm-hmm. Hunton and I think it's Jackson.
His friend Jackson Mark.
Yeah, so they do all this thinking, like outside of the box thinking, like what could this be, a curse or something? And then they bring up this whole, well, it's going to need the blood of a virgin if it's this thing. And then there's a whole thing about, well, how do we ask her this? And it's just like, why are you
that's
guys
why
so serious
funny,
when
dude,
it's so stupid? But it's like all these weird things, like the blood of a virgin, which comes from her... I think
bats
like
blood.
Bats blood
from the bats
the
nesting
bats,
in the
they
right?
they moved from the mill in graveyard
yeah Right.
Over. I think there was a
hoop,
yes,
which a came from Jell-O, mm. right? Because it's a laundry, you're getting, you know, this came from somebody's bag lunch. And then they were like, oh, well, you'd also need like, what's it called? Hand of Glory, which is either A, the hand of a dead man, which is not likely, or B, belladonna. And it's like, well, there's no belladonna within 200 miles of this place. So we're safe. Like, it can't be that.
The belladonna, the hand of glory, you know, it's going to be much worse, but
right. But then, unbeknownst to them, the first woman, Annette Frawley, she had dropped some antacid tablets. That's why this is funny, because it's so insane. She dropped some antacid tablets and the active ingredient was belladonna. How do you not laugh at this?
Yeah, no, I can't take that. I'm like, so
yeah.
if she didn't drop the antacids in that machine, it just would have been lightly possessed. But this is awful possessed. I'm like
a lesser demon, perhaps.
Like, King, yeah. What were you thinking at this point? Did you have too many antacids?
Yes, but antacids. That's the drug of choice.
Yeah, that was the drug of choice. But it's so ludicrous. It gets to this point, I'm like, what is fucking going on? And then they're trying to, like, they can't exercise the machine because they got it wrong, you know, because they fucked it up. And
then it kills Mark.
Yeah, the machine is like, all right, well, fuck you guys. It kills Jackson. And then I think it follows.
it follows Hunton. It follows Detective Hunton. Hunton goes to, throughout the story, there's this character, Roger Martin, who inspects the machines. Right. Yes. And it came down to it. He's like, look, there was nothing wrong with the machine. These accidents are happening, but the machines have fail safes and the fail safes are set. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with the machine. So I don't know what to tell you. And Hunton runs to Martin's place at the end to tell him, you know, my God, it's coming. And then he just hears this noise coming through town, which can only be this thing. I don't know how. And King doesn't describe it. We don't see it. But this thing has to be dragging itself through town.
And no one's noticed?
No.
It's so, like, what even is this story? It's so bizarre. It's just so strange. The demonically possessed laundry equipment.
Once again, though, very, very different from the last story in that the mangler is the actual problem here.
Mm.
Not the rats. This isn't a yeah. story of two guys, you know. This is like a mystery, a detective story where they're putting all the pieces together. Hunton, a detective, and his friend Mark, who's a professor, into the occult, apparently, you know, just putting this together. I see this as almost like a Kolchak episode. Can you not see Carl Kolchak writing about all yeah. this action is happening, but way over here somewhere, Carl Kolchak is writing a story about this, and Carl's going to come investigate this.
I would have enjoyed that.
There you go. See, that's the level of humor I'm seeing here.
This is not.
You're not sold. I can't get you on board with Kolchak. No,
look, it's not one of my favorite stories, but it is. It's one that I find really hilarious where it shouldn't really be. And I love that first part, like I say, because you're seeing this like, you're reading about this horrible accident that's happened. And I think another part that adds to it, well, it could be scary, and adds to the mystery is how they're like, well, the machine works fine, da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think your first thought is, oh, it's demonically possessed. You can listen to my thoughts on the film The Mangler on that episode, oh. The King Zone. They're not great. It is... It is one of the few Tobe Hooper films that I think not good. And I mostly really adore Tobe Hooper films, but this one I know. I cannot take possessed laundry equipment seriously, especially not seriously. But it feels like they were taking it way too seriously in the film. I can not take it seriously in the story because I can't. But it gets me with how serious it feels to start with. And then it's just like, what the fuck is even going on? It's a bizarre story. It's not one I dislike, mind you. It it's just a very strange mishmash of things that work and don't work, but I will absolutely treasure the antacids being why this was a bad possession. I can safely say that I enjoyed the short story a hell of a lot more than I enjoyed the film. And I don't know. I think I have a weird love-hate relationship with it. But honestly, I think the Mangler, probably it's one of those stories I think it's worth talking about. It's worth discussing how it is a ridiculously absurd story that is played so straight with some truly horrific things in there. And then you've got antacids that cause a possession.
That's a beautiful thing.
It's all sorts of things. And I thank Stephen King for just giving us the weirdness. And I'm almost sad that there isn't an adaptation of this that can really reflect how the story plays out. I don't know if it would work, but I'd like to see it.
I know, me too. I think this is one that I think could only maybe work as a short film.
Mm.
You know, so yeah, I think just a short film with this one would be fantastic. It's a little detective drama with supernatural undertones.
See, this for me is the kind of story that could have fit in with like maybe 2000s era Twilight Zone ish for like an adaption for something that goes for 20 minutes, because I think you can hit all those points within that time frame. Because I was thinking maybe it could have worked as like with Masters of Horror, but I think that would have lent maybe 15 minutes too much. So I'm thinking, yeah, something like that, it would have worked. I could see that working. All right. Well, Steve, let's get into our final thoughts and rating for this one. I'll go first. I'm giving this 3 Belladonna antacid tablets out of 5. It may go up in time. It's actually, my score has gone up by 0.5 star as discussing it. I think it might be one of my favorite, just out of left field, what the hell, kind of Stephen King stories. And I am actually quite happy. I enjoyed this a hell of a lot more than the film version. And as I said, there are things that I thought worked, things I just couldn't take seriously, but it's, for me, it's a mishmash of all sorts of things. But I can't be angry that I've read it, and I probably will likely revisit this one as well. As far as horrors, like, I can understand sort of the horror of industrial stuff, but the laundry machine, I don't know, it just doesn't work like it should for me. But I appreciate that it's the weirdest, absurd, straight-faced story about a possessed laundry machine.
That's beautiful. Look, I've got to go. Same as with Graveyard Shift, I have to give this 4.5. I read this, like I said, I read Night Shift probably, I was in junior high, so it's probably 12, 13 when I read these. So I was just finding King. So all of these stories from Night Shift, even Skeleton Crew to a degree, were in my formative King years. So this is my go-to. When I read King, this is sort of what I subconsciously compare it to. You know, this era, the late 70s, early 80s. I love this story exactly as we said, because of the absurdity, because it really goes too far in a lot of ways. Even I wanted to mention the descriptions, where Graveyard Shift was pretty sparse with describing the horror. King just doesn't even bat an eye here. And I applaud that. I appreciate that. Yeah, absolutely. 4.5 Belladonna antacid tablets for me as well.
And I can appreciate that. I absolutely 100% understand your reasoning, your thoughts, your feelings. 100%. It's such a bizarre story. But I hope none of my laundry equipment does get possessed. So that is a wrap on episode 11 of the King Zones Book Club podcast. It's been a pleasure to discuss these short stories with you, Steve. Thank you again for for,
as always,
for doing this. Yeah. And you can find us at supermarcy.com. It is the home of the Super Network, where you can find this podcast and the others, as well as the Kingzone podcast, where we discuss the adaptations of King's work. And if you want more links to all of that, you can also go to the Linktree, which is linktr.ee/thesupernetwork. And if you want to find me on socials, I am Super Marcy, just the one word. And on my Letterboxd, I am Super_Marcy. And you can also check out my lists of what I've ranked the Stephen King adaptations, from the movies to the miniseries and so forth. And Steve, where can people find you if they so desire to?
Find me on Spotify and Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, where I do Beat and Steve versus Camp Crystal Lake. Beat and I look at all of the Friday the 13th movies, some fan films, some ripoffs, unmade scripts. We've tackled some of those as well. We also have a new show called Beat and Steve versus Leatherface. We've just recorded Texas Chainsaw 2. So look for that coming out soon. And yeah, check me up on Letterboxd as well. I'm Fulci Rama over there. I have my definitive list of Friday the 13th, definitive list of Texas Chainsaw. And I, too, have a ranking of Stephen King movies and TV movies. So check those out. And maybe we can fight over those one day, Marcy.
Yes, maybe. And yeah, hopefully we will be back in a couple of months for the next episode. Schedules depending, but we are going to try to get these out at least every couple of months. Steve, do we have anything set for our next episode, or do we cut this out?
No, I don't have a theme. We won't cut it out, but I don't have a theme for the next two. I'm running low on themes. We may have to put a call out. So if any listeners have an idea of two stories that go well together, like chocolate and peanut butter, just let us know. We may have to go to Bead again, who gave us these two. But I'll look through the list and see what I can come up with.
Yeah, that'd be good. So stay tuned. And yeah, we'll see you all next time in the King Zones Book Club podcast area. Thank you, everyone. And goodbye.